Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Matt George, of course, the host of the Locked On Kings podcast. Matt, always good to have you, my man.
Hey, good to be here. So we're going to spend the next 45 minutes on Lord of the Rings. All right, so what's your guys' favorite moment from each movie? The best part from the books that didn't make it into the movie? Let's just dive right into it. We'll start with you, Kenny.
Is that where Smeagol is? Is that Lord of the Rings?
Yes.
Is that what it's called, Smeagol?
Yes, Smeagol is a.k.a. Gollum.
Oh, I have no idea
what's going
on.
Well, I'm proud of you for having that because D'Lo has absolutely no clue.
A Hobbit is Lord of the Rings, right? A Hobbit is a Lord of the Rings reference?
Yes, but I don't really count that because Hobbit is a book.
Oh.
So
yeah, it's like noting the title.
I got nothing then, Matt.
Help me out here. This may be insulting to you, Matt, but I'm not trying to. What's the difference between Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter?
Oh, my heart. My heart with a question like that. That's just poor J.R. Tolkien with a question like that. No disrespect to J.K. Rowling, but J.R. Tolkien is the master that is Lord of the Rings. J.R. Tolkien creates worlds that J.K. Rowling and everybody else, George R. Martin, they all wish that they could create worlds like J.R. Tolkien. Okay, where do we even start with that? I don't think you want me to take the show down that deep of a rabbit hole, but no, the Lord of the Rings, I mean, J.R. Tolkien not only created an entire world and different species and the amazing storyline that is the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit and the Silmarillion, he also created full languages. It's not a joke. He actually created languages in Middle Earth, which he created. So that, I'll just scratch the surface and leave it with that before you fall asleep.
Didn't create Harlem in the early 90s, though.
But who's better, John Singleton or the Hughes brothers?
That's not fair.
That's a great question.
That's not fair.
It's an easy answer. The answer is John Singleton.
Harry Potter's made for children and teenagers. Lord of the Rings is made for men.
Well, there you have it, folks. Lord of the Rings is made for men. And Matt George, he is a man. To somebody he is. He is a man who covers the Sacramento Kings, and we saw the Kings win again last night. And I feel like we're getting to the point where Kings fans almost feel like they have to apologize for being happy that the team is winning three preseason games here. But I think there's some legitimate good things to come out of these three games.
Abso-freaking-lutely. And can we stop it with the yeah, but every single time a positive is brought up about the Sacramento Kings? Look, we know the context of it being preseason. We know Dame and CJ didn't play last night. We know the Clippers only had Paul George for the first half. We know Chris Paul and Devin Booker didn't play for the Phoenix Suns. Nobody is going to try and sell you the fact that the Kings are better than those three teams, and no one's going to try and pretend that the Kings beat those three teams or defensively they look so much better, but they have played the best of the best from each of those three teams. No one's trying to sell you that, but there's no need to yeah, but every single positive that we take away from preseason. I asked on my most recent podcast, like, what are you looking for in preseason? Because I guarantee you, if it were the other way, if it was flipped, if this Kings team was 0-3 right now, the same people would be freaking out and losing their minds that this team is incapable of winning a game. So 3-0, no, it doesn't matter. Final scores do not matter. But what does matter to me is the Kings are handling their business and winning comfortably against rosters that they should be better than, which is something that we've seen this team struggle with for the last 15 years. How many freaking times have we talked about this team playing to the level of their competition? I could count on 20 freaking hands the amount of games the Kings should have won, even in the Golden One Center era. should have won that they lost because they didn't show up, only the next night to show up and take the prime Golden State Warriors to double overtime and nearly beat them. Like, that's been an issue with this Kings team. So the fact that, no, they can't control who they're playing, but they can control how they play against those teams. And the fact that the Kings have had three double-digit leads in all three of these games, have won relatively comfortably, but again, the final score doesn't matter. But in addition to that, one thing that stood out to me that I'll continue to point out is in all three games, the Kings have held their opponents to under 30 points in three out of four quarters in all three games. Again, I don't care if the best players aren't playing. That's what the team should be doing. You don't need to but that. We know the context. You're seeing what you should be seeing from this Kings team at this point in the preseason. What more can you ask for at this point?
Absolutely nothing else. You were spot on with that, Matt. The other thing we kind of, you know, got my attention, as you said, nobody's saying that they're going to be better than Phoenix. Nobody said they're going to be better than the Clippers. Nobody says they're going to be better than Portland because of what's going on. I don't know. They might be better than the Clippers and the Portland Trail Blazers. I am of the belief that this team is built differently than what we've seen in the past. They're deeper. They have more NBA-ready guys that are ready to produce at a average to high level. Straight off the top. And I don't know, you're looking at Portland, a team that I think is on a decline. You're thinking, looking at the Clippers, who's a team dealing with their best player or second, whatever, their best player, Kawhi Leonard, not being there. They might be better than those two teams.
Yeah, you know, guys, of course, we're doing Kings talk here, and I agree with you, Kenny. It's easy. Well, it's not easy, but it's understandable to make an argument that, okay, the Kings might be better than the Los Angeles Clippers because they're missing Kawhi, and who knows how good that team is going to be, even though I still have faith in Paul George and the ability of that team to still be like a middle-of-the-pack Western Conference team. I'm expecting them to be at best a fourth seed, but at worst like an eighth seed. I still think they're going to be just fine. Portland, they have the Damian Lillard drama, and they've continued to struggle to surround him. They deal with injuries. They have a lack of depth, though. I'm willing to listen to arguments about that, but it surprised me the amount of conversations that I've had with some of our national Locked On hosts, Locked On NBA hosts, and some hosts from the Eastern Conference that aren't really believers in the Phoenix Suns, who think that they're kind of a flash in the pan team from last season, who, I mean, Chris Paul's another year older, and will he be able to stay healthy? And DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker, I thought personally made the step next year to be, okay, that is their group. Those are their guys going forward, and they're going to be very, very good for many years to come. But now we're seeing even hesitation with the Phoenix Suns to pay DeAndre Ayton the money that he's looking for with the max money. So I'm curious your guys' thoughts on the Phoenix Suns, because the more people I talk to, it's like 50-50 or maybe even 60-40 non-believers in Phoenix, which I think is really interesting.
But non-believers in what sense? In getting back to the finals or being a playoff team?
I think playoff team for sure. I think it's getting back to the finals, and two, finishing as highly as they did. Like, most people I hear talk about the Phoenix Suns as potentially being in the mix for a high seed play-in, like seven or eight, maybe even six and five, just scratching out of that, which shocked me because I still think they're a top four team in the West.
I think I lean with you, Matt. I still think they're a top four team for sure. And Kenny, maybe it's not the lightning in a bottle that they had last year, but that's still a good ball club.
Right. Yeah. I think they're a good ball club. Devin Booker alone being one of the premier scorers in the game, even if Chris Paul were to go down with some type of injury. I think he'd beat enough. DeAndre Ayton, I think people kind of jump out the window with DeAndre a little bit, but I still think he's a damn good young center in this game.
Well, it's not just DeAndre, though. It's your boy, too, Mikal Bridges. They're trying to figure out how to pay.
He won $20 million a year.
Told you it was going to happen. We talked about that.
$20 million a year from Mikal Bridges.
Yo, success breeds the desire for the bag.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think Phoenix is a good team. I think they're a legit playoff team. I don't see them in a play-in situation. But I probably agree with some of those other people that they were a two-seed last year. I don't know if they'll be a two-seed again this year.
The Locked On Podcast Network, a couple of months ago, we did our version of our ultimate mock draft where we, right before the draft started, and actually D'Lo was part of the show. He was our Odyssey expert for Sacramento and analyzed the selection that I made. And we're doing something relatively similar on the Locked On Podcast Network where it's like our ultimate season preview. And we broke up teams in different groups. There was like the contenders, the title hunters, there were the tankers, there were the teams that were on the cusp. And that's where the Sacramento Kings were thrown in with five other teams. So we actually just recorded that roundtable last night. That's going to be out on Friday where you get the Locked On NBA podcast. I thought it was a really interesting conversation with how many of those teams are in a similar situation. And it got me excited because especially in the Western Conference, I think the difference between maybe even seed 6 and seed 11, I think it's going to be 4 or 5 games max or 6 games max. It's going to be really, really tight and really muddy in the middle of the Western Conference, which is exciting from the standpoint of, man, if the Kings can stay in the hunt and get hot at the right time, who knows how far they can boost themselves up the standings. But at the same time, too, we could get, if the Kings do make their way into the play-in, we could get some very, very interesting matchups. And I wanted to make sure I asked you guys and those in the chat house and those listening, because we talked about this at the end of our roundtable. Like, if you had to pick and choose, it's a single elimination game. Kings win and they're in the playoffs. Kings lose and they're out. Of the non-tanking teams in the Western Conference, which team would you feel most confident with the Kings facing in that single elimination? Let's assume the Kings had home court advantage. Like, which of those teams on the cusp do you think the Kings would be most confident in facing?
Off the top of my head, I would say Memphis.
Memphis was one of mine. Memphis was one of mine because they match up. Even though Memphis got there and figured it out and did it last year, I mean, the Kings.
They didn't the year before.
Correct. And the Kings have had a lot of success. I mean, De'Aaron Fox owns his matchup with John Morant, no matter how many people want to label John more of a star.
Don't tell anyone. Yeah.
Yeah. But the Kings absolutely own those matchups. Well, they're 3-2 in the De'Aaron Fox versus John Morant era between those two teams, but the numbers between Fox and Ja aren't even remotely close. And I've said it many times, including on this show, give De'Aaron Fox that stage, he's going to shine brighter than Ja did last season. So I like that matchup a lot, Kenny.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I assume the Pelicans are probably in this conversation as well. I don't know if the Minnesota Timberwolves are in this conversation. Those teams, as they're laid out, neither one of them in the situation you presented concerned me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And now we're talking about after 82 games playing in a one game play-in scenario where they're on their way to the playoffs, if they wind up winning and they're playing at home. Oh, I'd take that matchup just about versus anyone.
The Portland Trailblazers could be there. The Golden State Warriors could be there. And hell, based off of how last season went, the Dallas Mavericks could be there. And the Kings owned the Dallas Mavericks last year. So maybe that's a group that that potentially works their way into that conversation. But I've had a lot of fun with that hypothetical.
I think Portland's going to be there for sure.
Portland, Dallas was 42-30 last year.
Mm-hmm.
I know you. Are you and Kenny in the same I hate Dallas station wagon?
I mean, there's a natural reason not to like that team, but I don't think it's worth making a music video over. I think it's worth making two music videos over. But I'm significantly unimpressed with the Dallas Mavericks, especially their just overall lack of depth, which is humorous based off of what the Kings look like coming into last season. And I don't know what Kristaps Porzingis and Luka Doncic are going to look like. Like, if I'm looking at teams to fall out of the Western Conference, potentially that the Kings could replace or other teams that are out could replace, Dallas is somewhere on that list, not number one or number two, maybe, but they're higher up more than I have them a secured playoff team. But there could be a little bit of hater in there for sure.
I got Portland in that play-in. So they're going to fall out of the top six and be in the play-in situation. And to be honest with you, I did not name them in there because if you're in a one-game situation, I don't want to see Dame in a one-game situation.
Good point. Yeah.
Or as Will Griffith points out, Jason Kidd is that bad of a coach.
Mm.
Could be, you know, that could be part of the scenario, too. That's obviously, and you referenced it kind of in passing, that's a team that's maybe a stretch to say they're in transition, but they're in something. Like you change your president of basketball operations, you change your head coach, you're kind of shifting in philosophy a little bit if you're the Dallas Maverick. There's a change in something. So to think that they're just going to walk out there and be 42-30 again, probably a stretch, or, you know, whatever the 82-game equivalent of that is. Or, you know, there is an outside chance that they're better. I don't think that they're better, but
yeah, I don't think they're better at all. And knock on wood, because
Luka's going to win the MVP. I don't know if anyone's told you yet, but that's been preordained.
The Mavericks just need to go 38 and whatever that is, and they'll give him the MVP.
He willed them to the 11th seed.
Of course. Well, knock on wood, because I'm not certainly rooting for this, but the Dallas Mavericks are one Luka Doncic injury away from being worse than the Kings, the Timberwolves, and like they're one injury away, and I'm not rooting for that at all.
No, for sure.
But that's that team just, to me, has nothing outside of the amazingness that is Luka Doncic, and that's a lot of weight to put on the shoulders of a man who may be already a little too heavy.
We didn't mention, he could have gone Nikola Jokic over the offseason, and he comes back and he's skinny Luka.
He didn't.
Jokic is likable. Jokic.
Is he?
I love Jokic.
Is he?
I think Jokic is great.
Oh, Matt's breaking news here on. Okay, that's true. That's accurate. None of us mentioned San Antonio in that. Are they out of it? Where did they rank with that Locked On roundtable that you did?
Yeah, they were in the tanking category, and I think it's just because which is weird to say because Greg Popovich is still there. So it's almost like a Greg Popovich write-in for in the conversation. Mm-hmm. But that team is in such transition. They've lost DeMar DeRozan. They've lost Rudy Gay. That team is just in massive transition right now, and they have a bunch of young players. Maybe they do overperform. We've seen it before, so it wouldn't necessarily shock me. And they're not in the bowels of the Western Conference, like where I'd put OKC and maybe even Houston. Like, OKC is on a tier of their own, in my opinion, and maybe I think Houston's going to be better than people realize, but still not good. I think Houston will probably be better than San Antonio, in my opinion. But again, the Greg Popovich effect, I can't write them off completely. But they're in the tankers category, which I think they belong in, at least this year in the West.
Let me ask you a little bit more about these Kings, man. And I'm not sitting here trying to have the great debate about who's better or whatever the case may be. Everybody knows where I stand, and that doesn't mean the other guy's a scrub. But Terrence Davis, do you think he's earned minutes on and consistent minutes on this team with what he's shown in the preseason so far?
I think consistent is the right word. And I asked Terrence about this after the game last night, because we know he's a microwave. And when he gets going, he can score a lot of points really, really quickly. And the Kings have a very dynamic option in Terrence Davis coming off the bench when he gets going. And he admitted, he's like, yeah, I've been working hard this offseason to be more consistent in my game. And I think if he becomes more consistently reliable with, I don't expect him to have the first half that he had in Portland last night every single night, because then he'd work his way into like a six-man or starter conversation, which I think is just too much to ask for. But if you can count on 10 to 12 points and upwards of 38 to 40% from three-point range from Terrence Davis basically on a nightly basis, hell yeah, he's earned minutes. And we've talked about it before, Kenny. I know you already think TD is better than Buddy Hield. I think what we saw last night still proves, and he's proven really since day one that he got here in Sacramento, is that he is a cheap and capable Buddy Hield replacement. And Buddy Hield doesn't play in last night's game. Terrence Davis comes in, steps up, and provides that offensive spark off the bench. So I just like the versatility that he gives Sacramento off the bench, because he can provide that microwave scoring that you get from Buddy Hield, but he also adds defense and an ability to attack the basket. So consistency is the big thing for Terrence, but he's more than earned the opportunity to show that he can be consistent. I think that's where I'm at with him.
We're really pushing that nickname a bit hard, aren't we?
What, TD?
The microwave.
Oh, I just know that as a, like, microwave score is a label in
El Caballo Loco over here.
I know James told us last week. I don't remember. I know James said he had to explain to Terrence Davis who the microwave was. I can't remember where that nickname originated from during Ben practice. Johnson. Was it? Who was it?
Oh, you mean the original microwave?
No. Who labeled Terrence Davis the microwave last week?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, okay. I just remember James Hamm had said he had to explain to.
I think it was one of the Terrence Davis.
Oh, it was probably James Hamm. For goodness' sake,
he mentioned it, and he was like, "I didn't know who that was."
Is there's no situation though. Like that's kind of what this all boils down to is this is all great hypothetical if Buddy's not here. Mm. Buddy is here. He's a member of the Sacramento Kings. Maybe another question would, is there a scenario where Terrence Davis overtakes Buddy on the, you know, the proverbial depth chart? Because that I can't quite envision.
I think that's possible, but I don't think we're there yet. Kenny, you might disagree. Kenny, you might.
Kenny was there last year.
Yeah, right. Well, look, I think we're there talent wise, but I also understand as long as Buddy Hield is here. Like, I think we're there to say, okay, we can move on from Buddy Hield because we have Terrence Davis. If Buddy Hield is here, I understand completely that he's going to get all the opportunities to be that, you know, have that role. And Terrence Davis is going to kind of get the scraps in that respect.
Yeah, I already think that Buddy Hield is what Harrison Barnes was as like a trade chip at the deadline last season is what I think Buddy Hield is going to be this season. Now I'm hoping he also has the positive play and the success that Harrison had last year to boost his value even more. But just the difference in $22 million in 1 year with 2 years left versus $20 million this year going down to 18. That's just a massive difference in the eyes of. Actually, I'm sorry, I messed that up. He's at 22 this year, and it's 20 and 18 the next 2 years. That's a massive difference in people's mind. It's only a 2 year commitment versus a 3 year commitment for a player like Buddy, who we all readily admit is overpaid. So I already think he's going to be a massive trade chip come the deadline or around the deadline. The addition of Terrence Davis here in Sacramento makes it even more likely, in my opinion, that Buddy Hield is shopped or Buddy Hield is gone, because like I've already talked about, his replacement is here and he's cheaper in Terrence. Now, Terrence is not going to give you everything that Buddy can give you in terms of just a lights out incredible when Buddy's on from 3-point range. Good luck, everybody else. But I guarantee you Terrence Davis can happily step into a game and take 13 threes a night.
Yeah, but how many of those games actually happen?
What the buddy
moments, like you could probably you can probably remember, and I'm not insinuating they're not there. I'm genuinely asking how many are there. There's only a couple, man, and it's like we're paying this guy $22 million a year just hoping we get a couple of those a year. Like, no, man, that ain't it.
They happened a lot more often when he was under Dave Yeager and right before he got that contract than it happens right now, which is not obviously all on his shoulders. But to answer your question, like the last time I remember Buddy Hield tying together like really, really good offensive performances was like when he carried the Kings in back-to-back Celtics games. And the second one was, I think, right after Kobe's passing.
Well,
so,
he had a stretch last year where he played, you know, 2-3 good games in a row, and then he didn't, like, and then he didn't. But you mentioned the Dave Yeager thing. Why do you think he was so much more effective?
Because I think he had an established role that was more than just, hey, every time the ball touches your hand, put it up. Like I think he played very, very comfortably next to De'Aaron Fox. One, he didn't have the reputation then that he does today, to where teams know as soon as Buddy touches the ball, just crowd him and basically get in his jersey. Like everybody does it now and forces Buddy to put the ball on the floor, which he didn't have to do too often a couple of years ago. But also we saw the Kings getting Buddy Hield the ball in fast break situations for catch and shoot. And for God's sakes, we saw the Kings run some off ball sets for Buddy every once in a while, which they don't seem to want to do anymore. Now they will a handful of times. Well, they did last season. They started implementing them, but the first season under Luke Walton, they weren't doing that at all because they were having Buddy bring the ball up the floor half the freaking time. Now that Tyrese Halliburton is here and Davion Mitchell's here, in addition to De'Aaron Fox, hopefully we're going to see even more off-ball screen Buddy Hield, which I think is a big difference. But I mean, the way Buddy plays, how the freedom that Buddy played with Dave Yeager, we haven't seen since. And I don't know how much of that is on Walton or how much of that is on Buddy. It's obviously a combination of both. But if you just go back and watch highlights of Buddy that season when he was starting alongside De'Aaron but playing freely, the way he played then versus how he plays now is just significantly different with the eye test alone.
Well, I put it squarely on Buddy Hield, because you look at the way he plays, you look at the way he plays, and that's on him. Like, he's the one just chucking up threes all the time. And it's not, I'm pretty sure Luke Walton isn't saying, don't cross that 3-point line. You know, only shoot threes. Like, there's times with the plays they run where, you know, he's coming tight off these screens. It's a wide open lane. Then he pulls up from three at the top of the key all the time. The ironic thing about Buddy Hield, and my views on Buddy Hield is, said it numerous times, as a starter, those kind of things kill you. You know what I mean? The role that he looks to be in this year, coming off the bench, doing that, I think is a perfect role for him. You want to talk about a microwave? He was born to be a microwave. You know what I mean? And him coming off the bench with the role of, let me see if my shot is on tonight. Let me try and get going that way. But what I do or don't do doesn't ultimately hurt the team, because I can, they can get me out of here in a heartbeat. I think that's going to help his game out, help him relax a little bit more. And I think it's going to help the team out. I think that's going to be a good role for him.
Go ahead, Matt. I was just going to make a bad microwave joke, but go ahead.
I think you said there, unless I just imagine that you use this word, Kenny, is I think you said relaxed. And I think that's an interesting word, because we've seen Buddy have success, and it doesn't surprise me at all that Dave Yeager found success with Buddy Hield off the bench. It doesn't surprise me at all that a couple seasons ago, or was it last season? No, it was a couple seasons ago. Luke Walton found success with Buddy coming off the bench and Bogdan Bogdanovic starting, because Buddy could kind of ease into the game. He could come in and facing second string and bench talent, he could let the game come to him a little bit more, versus how many times as a starter do we see the Kings try and run a play for Buddy first or second possession to try and get him going. And if the shot's off, that could have an effect on him for at least the rest of the first half. And he'll try and shoot his way out of that slump, to his credit. I've never had an issue with the Kings wanting more from Buddy Hield after they paid him. Like, as soon as he got paid $24 million and had that 4-year contract, I had no problem with Luke Walton saying, we need more out of you than just shooting. Except now it seems like it's completely transitioned to, we only need shooting out of you and absolutely nothing else. So I know you say, like, you put that on Buddy Hield, and I understand that he's still the one shooting the basketball, but the amount of times that Luke Walton has got a question about the high volume of threes, Buddy is said, and Luke's answer is always the same. Well, we want Buddy shooting those shots. If the ball's in Buddy's hands, it's going up. I'm expecting it to go in. So the Kings are enabling that kind of behavior from Buddy, maybe because they don't see him being effective any other way than hitting a lot of threes and hoping that he gets hot. I'm not saying anybody's blameless in Buddy Hield's decline really since he signed that contract, but I do think what we see in Terrence Davis is that Buddy Hield, what we know Buddy Hield to be for this Kings team, is replaceable, plus you get a little bit more potentially from TD.
I will say this, though, in defense of, guess what, in defense of Luke Walton, is we know now, yep, hold it to me. We know now that Luke Walton isn't going to say anything less. Regardless of what he's saying in practice and in the locker room, you ask him about Buddy Hield, he's going to say, oh, we love that from Buddy. He's a great 3-point shooter. He could be cursing Buddy out in the locker room and telling him how ridiculous it is that he keeps doing that. When we talk to Luke, he's going to say just that. And Jason Jones was on here the other day, and he brought up one of the Charlotte games last year where Buddy took a ill-advised three, and he said, I know for a fact they didn't want him to take that shot, and they were pissed that he took the shot. They're almost pissed at the person who passed them the ball, because you knew what Buddy was about to do. So why did you pass him the ball? So I think I want him to get back to the Yeager years where he had a variation in his offensive game. And that's, I think that'll help him out a lot. I don't know if he can be that guy again. I don't know. In the first two preseason games, it doesn't look like he's interested in being that type of guy. But if he could get back to having an inside-out game and having variations to the way that he gets his shots up, I think he could be super successful off the bench.
Well, guys, Buddy Hield has played in two preseason games. He's played a grand total of 45 minutes and he's taken 26 threes. So, and he's 7 for 26 in those 26 threes. So I think Buddy Hield has one clear role and that's about it.
I mean, it is kind of impressive. Like let's be honest. That's an impressive ratio. You mentioned when the Kings signed the contract with you felt like Luke Walton wanted more from Buddy Hield after that contract was signed. You signed and you had no problem with Luke Walton going to Buddy saying, "Hey, we want more from you now that we've, you know, got you locked up long term." Do you feel that that's the case with Rashawn Holmes?
Yes, in a weird way. Like it's with Rashawn Holmes, it's almost like we demand more of the same, but we need more rebounding and rim protection, I think is where the asks come from. I don't think that it's really necessary for the Kings to ask more offensively out of him. The push shot is automatic. You'd love to see him expand his range, but at the same time too, we know Luke Walton and the Kings coaching staff are also kind of holding the reins and pulling Rashawn back a little bit when it comes to 3-point attempts and 3-point opportunities. Cause we know Rashawn works on that part of his game. So I don't think Rashawn has gotten the green light from coaching staff to shoot as many threes as maybe he wants to be that floor spacer. But in getting that new contract, I think it comes with the expectation of Rashawn, you're going to keep doing what you're doing because we love you. And at that, to this point, you've been an incredible value contract. We want you to continue being a value contract by being even better than you were even after getting paid. And how does Rashawn Holmes get better? It's being a more consistent rebounder and it's becoming a reliable rim protector. I don't think he's ever going to get to like vintage Serge Ibaka levels of rim protection or anything like that. But if the man can average a couple blocks a game and more importantly, just change shots when guards work their way into the paint, that's a major difference for this Kings team. And then have the ability to secure the defensive rebound afterwards.
This could be absolutely nothing, but does Rashawn Holmes look a little off in these preseason games to you?
Yeah, he was one of the biggest negatives that I saw being pointed out about last night's game. Now, he was going up against an absolute tree in Yusuf Nurkic, and we've seen Rashawn struggle in the past with those bigger bigs, which is why I think the addition of Alex Len is so tremendously important in the minutes Alex Len can provide when you take on a team like the Blazers, which people forget when Alex Len was with the Sacramento Kings, he had a little issue with CJ McCollum towards the end of that season where he got into a shoving match with CJ McCollum. So that's another reason to just love Alex Len. Of course, CJ didn't play in last night's game, but that's where I think Alex Len is extremely important when the Kings have those matchups against a Nurkic or a Jokic, even though Jokic likes to take guys away from the basket. I think Rashawn can be a little more useful there. The Los Angeles Lakers with Dwight Howard down low and the size that they have. So that's why I think the addition of Alex Len is so important for this Kings team, because Rashawn, as athletic as he is, as fun as he is, he's undersized as a big, and those big centers have historically punished him down low.
Does Tristan Thompson fit in that category also?
I think he does just because of his IQ and ability to crash the glass just based off of that alone. But I would call anytime Tristan Thompson gets minutes against those bigger guys, I would call it a mismatch for the most part. So versus Alex Len, I don't necessarily call it a mismatch. I expect those starting centers to be better than Alex Len. Don't get me twisted. But in terms of pound for pound, center for center, I think Alex Len matches up with those guys versus Tristan Thompson or Rashawn Holmes to me. They are mismatches, but Tristan has made a career out of understanding how to take advantage of maybe his quickness and his positioning to secure rebounds and not just rely on brute strength like those guys have to.
Are you surprised by what you're seeing offensively from Davion Mitchell so far in these preseason games? We all know what he was able to do on the defensive end and what he continues to do, but 20 points last night, I think he was 6 of 9 from beyond the arc. He had a really good game offensively against the Clippers. Are you surprised by this, or is it kind of what you expected?
I wish I could say I wasn't, but that's not true. I absolutely am surprised by what I've seen, and I spent a lot of time talking with I had an assistant coach from Baylor on Locked On Kings about a week or two after Davion was drafted. And one of the first things I talked to him about was, hey, Davion, all of a sudden his final year at Baylor has this 40%+ 3-point shooting year after shooting in the low 30s for his entire college career. Like, was this an anomaly and what happened? And he shared with me that lockout's not the right term. When everything was shut down because of COVID, there were only a certain amount of players that you could have in the practice facility. And they would say, or they shared that Davion was in the practice facility every day with a couple of their equipment managers in Baylor rebounding for him, and he would just get shots up and work on his shooting stroke, trying to speed up that shooting stroke. And we saw the results in a condensed college season. And now we're starting to see it to some capacity in preseason. I mean, 6 of 9 from 3-point range last night, and I think he's like 10 of 16 for all of the preseason, which I don't know. I mean, that's over 50%. I don't expect that to carry over into the NBA at all. But I'll say what I said on the podcast last night. If Davion Mitchell is that 40, even high 30s, but 40-plus 3-point shooter that he was, or 3-point percent shooter that he was in college, he's immediately a high-impact player for the Sacramento Kings. He already was defensively, but you add an extra layer on to that to where you don't have to hide him offensively. He spaces the floor enough to where you can get away with playing him alongside Fox and Tyrese Halliburton, and teams have to respect him. And then you add some improved playmaking to that, and I'm very interested to see how he looks at the end of the season as a playmaker versus how he looks right now. Like, there's no way in my mind this guy's not in a starting role conversation. Like, truth be told, if he's that 40% 3-point shooter, improved playmaking with the defense that he provides, he's a top 3 draft pick. For the second year in a row, Monty McNair is going to have a guy that finishes in the top 3 in rookie of the year voting. And the Kings are, Luke Walton has a very serious problem of, okay, we've talked a lot about this 3-guard lineup. Now we damn well have to implement it, because there's no way I can get away with bringing this guy off the bench or not playing him 30-plus minutes a night. And I think Davion's going to be in that conversation very quickly. I think Davion should be playing almost 30 minutes a night immediately off the bench now. Like, that's how good he is.
I mean, Tyrese was pretty close to that happening at the start of last season. So, and he didn't have this preseason in summer league. He had a preseason, but certainly not the caliber of what Davion Mitchell had. So that'll be interesting. Minute rotations will certainly be interesting to watch as the season gets underway 1 week from tomorrow. With that said, and as we close out here in the final minute and some change, is there anything you want to see headed into Thursday? Or are you just put your head down, let's get through this Lakers game and let's get to Portland next Wednesday?
Stay healthy, more of the same. I hope Marvin Bagley plays and shows me something, because he hasn't looked bad in any of the preseason games, but he also hasn't looked any better. And, you know, it's funny. I read the injury report that Marvin wasn't playing because of an injury, and I know that's more precaution than the Kings than anything else, but I honestly, like, shrugged. I was like, okay. Like, that's where I'm at with Marvin Bagley. If I see an injury report that says Marvin Bagley's out tonight, I'm like, all right. 2 years ago, it was, oh, damn. The Kings potential second best player is out. And that's like, that just says where Marvin Bagley is with this Kings team. Yeah. I would love Marvin Bagley to be available to play, because Kenny, like you and I have talked about, the Kings are a better team and their best chance for success is Marvin Bagley playing and playing well, but they've been able to have some semblance of success without him, to where if he's not available, it's like, all right, fine. And then another thing in addition to that, that I want to mention too, is De'Aaron has not played starter minutes. He shouldn't be playing starter minutes. He's only played in like the low to max mid 20s. Mm-hmm. So that will have an effect on this. He's only gotten to the free throw line 10 times in 3 preseason games, which I want that number to go up. But he's a perfect 10 of 10 from the free throw line, which is fantastic. Like that. And that's the best. If anybody is butting that, a free throw is the same in preseason as it is during the regular season. If that man can shoot, he's not going to shoot 100% from the free throw line, but if he shoots 80%+, the next level, that's going to take his game. And we talk about potentially really one stat alone boosting him into an all-star spot, a legitimate all-star spot in the Western Conference. That can be it with how much he's able to get to the free throw line. So I don't want him to sacrifice his body or anything and potentially get hurt, but I'd like to see him get to the line 6 to 8 times in the limited minutes that he plays, and hopefully continue to shoot a perfect percentage.
Yeah. Matt George, host of the Locked On Kings podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.